Rocio, and I am first generation Dominican.
Hi, I'm Mercedes, and I was born in Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic.
And we are
Amplifying the Afro in Afro-Dominican.
Hi, Mercedes.
Hi, Rocio.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm really good today. I was thinking about my mom earlier because we do this thing where we light an orange candle on the new moon.
Oh.
And like basically give gratitude to the universe and then ask the universe for what we want to receive in the next like month. And I forgot to do it.
Wait. So you guys light candles for the new year. I mean, for the new moon every month.
Yes.
That's pretty dope.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's like a nice thing that we do together.
Like any orange candle?
No, it is a Dominican orange candle.
Okay. Where do you get it?
From the Botanica.
Oh, Botanica.
Yeah.
Shout out to the Botanica.
The Botanica. You know what I'm talking about. It's like it's like tall and it has thick glass.
Yeah.
And they have all kinds of colors. It's like, you know, white, yellow, orange, pink. And they all apparently represent like a different thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
So do you like write down your intentions?
Yeah.
And then light the candle? Does the candle stay lit for?
Yeah. Yeah. You cannot blow out the candle.
So what if you like leave?
I leave it on. That's why that glass thing like protects it. Yeah.
You leave the candle on? Isn't that bad?
It just makes sure nothing around it could catch on fire.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Nothing's ever happened.
So you leave it on until it's done.
I actually leave it on and keep lighting one until the full moon. So it's like almost a week.
So have you had any experiences that you saw that you wrote something down and it manifested from what you wrote during the moon?
Oh my God. Yeah. So last month, I wrote because, you know, y'all, it's pandemic time. So I've been a little bit broke.
Temporarily out of cash.
Yes. Temporarily.
Out of cash.
Just temporarily, though.
Because you're not broken.
No. Just temporarily low funded.
Okay.
And I was like, hey, universe, thank you so much for this money. Please have this money come back to me 10 times over. Mm. And you know what just happened?
What?
The Department of Labor gave me $200 extra dollars for 3 more weeks.
Wow. Look at that.
Hey, man, you got to celebrate wins these days.
That's right.
Abundance. You have to celebrate wins.
That's right. And that's a win.
Yeah, that was a win for me.
That's dope.
Do you know, honestly, I was on my little bike ride yesterday and I'm so grateful for this bike. And I was just like doing a random ride around Brooklyn and looking at like the trees and lights. And I was like, fuck, man, I am so grateful and happy right now.
Aww.
You know what I mean? It's like I have an able body. I'm doing this awesome podcast with you. Like at the end of the day, I might be low fundage
temporarily.
But like I have everything I need and I have a lot of love in my life, you know?
Yeah,
like it's so much to be grateful for.
Oh,
yeah,
that's really cool. And that's really nice that you have that thing with your mom like that.
Yeah.
Why am I not being able to come up with words? Like you guys have, it's really cool that you and your mom have this kind of like processor thing you do together. What's that called?
I don't know.
Spiritual
tradition?
Yeah, tradition.
Yeah,
that's really cool that you and your mom have a tradition that you kind of do every month.
Yeah, it is really cool.
It's a nice way to bond.
It's a really nice way to bond. One time she freaked me out. She called me. She was like, Rocio, we must, you know, ven aquí, like, come, let's hang out. And I was like, okay. And like, we met up and she's like, here are your candles.
I love it. You know what's really cool? Your mom, right, on her page.
Yeah.
Her Instagram page.
Yeah.
There's a pic there that shows her crystals.
Yeah.
She has like the coolest crystals.
Yeah.
Too.
She'd be loving them crystals.
Yeah. That's kind of cool. So you've had like really cool upbringing with spspirituality, huh?
I think so. I'm grateful that my mom didn't push religion like my grandma. You know, my grandma was like super Catholic.
Yeah.
Jesus and saints everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, always going to church. And my mom was pretty chill about it. You know, she let me kind of find my own spiritual journey. And then like we had, you know, some together, you know, we started meditating together.
That's cool.
Yeah. She introduced me to Vipassana meditation. So I did several silent retreats for like 10, 12 days. And like we both sort of created our own way we wanted to accept it, religion. Cause I've had a tough balance in understanding of it.
Yeah.
When I was younger, you know, I didn't like it.
Mm. I also grew up Catholic and I went to Catholic high school. Mm. And then I kind of went left and went into Buddhism, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. It was completely different. I mean, people in my family were like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know? But they've been really accepting of the process. And I think it's just cool to just explore.
Yeah.
You know?
How did you find Buddhism? How did you find it?
Well, I had a friend who, an actor friend, who practiced, and she introduced me to it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, many years ago. And I saw a lot of great benefits from my practice. There's actually a lot of actors that practice too.
Oh, cool.
Because, you know, Buddhism is pretty practical. You know, it's
It's
the law of cause and effect. So you do some shit, you will see the result of you doing shit. If you don't do shit, you ain't gonna see nothing. So
it's
kind of cool because it holds you accountable.
Yeah, which is what I really like.
Yeah,
I really, really like that. Yeah, I think that's, you know, I think that's my problem with Catholicism, and I hope no one gets offended, but I kind of get really anxious or I don't want to say upset, but like it bothers me or irks me when people are like, God willing, or like if the Lord will let me, or kind of like not having accountability or responsibility, this isn't up to me. This is up to this God that punishes me if I don't do it, act a certain way or whatever. But I like what you're saying about like holding yourself accountable, with your practice of Buddhism, because, you know, it always just gives me like the, when someone's just like,
yeah.
Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
And that's the problem I've always had with it. And so many rules.
Yeah.
And I wasn't into that either, but you know, but there is also good in it too. You know, for example, one of my uncles who was a really, 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 bad drug and alcohol abuser. I mean, he got sober and what saved him was religion.
Wow.
You know, so like there's also that, and I see that, and like that's good. You know what I mean? That he was able to sober up and get his stuff together and use religion as a platform to like build himself up.
Yeah.
You know,
I think as long as you have something, right? A spiritual practice, whatever that is, you know, whether it's lighting some candles, whether it's going to church, whatever rocks your boat. But I think especially during all these crazy times that we live in, it's so important to have some type of spiritual foundation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whatever that is. Doesn't matter. If it's yoga, it's yoga, you know? But I don't know. It's helped me, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And I think it's not just a linear thing. Like,
I agree.
It's everything, you know? And I think as long as, you know, you're open, people are open to learning about different things, you know, because like my brother at one point was a 5%er, you know, or 5%er. Yeah. And so that's like a whole other.
Well, what's that mean? 5%er.
I mean, that's a whole other thing. It's like it's a religion, I think, I don't even know what to say, because I don't even know the whole thing. But a 5%er basically is, they think they're divine.
Uh-huh.
So they're, man and God are one.
Yeah.
So they are one. So he went through this phase where he didn't want to be called by his name. He wanted to be called by his divine name.
Oh,
and everybody in the family was like, what? What's your name? No, we're not doing that. And then all my mom knew that he was a number 7. She's like, what is going on with my kids? My son is a 7. My daughter's a Buddhist. What is going on? Where did I go wrong?
That is funny.
She's super open-minded, and shout out to her because
nice.
We definitely went through the journey of spirituality. And but we all respect each other's, you know, practices.
Good. Yeah. 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 I think my family now has come to a point where we really respect what each individual journey is at this point. You know what I mean? Like, we're kind of, you know, we don't need the Catholicism, but it is there for those family members. And for the most part, like, I know a couple of my aunts and a bunch of my cousins, they're all meditators. I don't think they're Buddhist. You know, like, I'm a meditator, but I'm not Buddhist.
Right.
And I think for the most part, like, a huge percentage of my family now meditates, which I think is fantastic. Dope.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Question for you.
Yeah.
So, how would you raise your kids? Would you raise them to what? Practice what?
Well, I practice transcendental meditation right now. So maybe that, you know, I think it's really helpful. But I do want to kind of do something similar to what my mom did to me and not impose anything, mm-hmm. but be open-minded and let them know what I do. And
yeah.
Let them know that they're open to do whatever vibes with them, mm-hmm. you know, and just hope.
That's cool you were raised like that. I definitely was not.
Yeah.
I was like, no, that we didn't have choices. It was like, it's Sunday. You need to go to church.
No. Yeah. Unless I was with my, you know, mi abuela, my grandmother. My grandma was the only person who made us go to church. Everybody else was pretty, you know, they didn't really.
I mean, there's some people that believe, you know, you teach your child this one thing until they're 18. And then when they're 18, they make a choice because they don't want to confuse the child, according to what people say. And then there was the other side of, like, not teaching your child anything. And then I wonder if there's a study. I wonder too.
Well, first of all, that's, like, so insulting because children are brilliant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're brilliant creatures, and they have the capability to make their own brilliant decisions. And anyone who wants to fight me on that, let's go. You know what I'm saying? I think the only difference between, like, a 5-year-old and me is I just have more lived experience. That's literally the only difference.
Yeah.
But they could probably do just as much as I, you know, especially these days with technology and everybody being on technology.
And I think it's cool to, I mean, I personally think it's cool to have your child be exposed to everything.
Yeah.
You know, like, one weekend you go to a Buddhist center. The next weekend you go to a non-denominational. Next weekend you go to, you know,
a mosque.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I think it's so cool.
Love is love, and I think you know, spirituality is all one, I think.
Yeah. I agree.
Which brings us up to our guest.
Oh my god, yeah, we have a dope guest.
Speaking of ancestors.
Yeah.
And spirituality.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, this fantastic. Let's introduce her.
Yeah, we have an amazing person on tonight. Her name is Cili Recio. And here's a little info about her. First of all, let's start with the fact that she has a dope book out.
Yes.
Okay. A children's book. If Dominican were a color, you guys have to get that book. The book is so beautiful.
It's amazing.
And so is she on the inside and out.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit about her. She's been calling herself a writer since she won a trophy in a poetry contest in the 6th grade. She's an Afro-Dominican storyteller, a disruptor, and a mommy. She earned a bachelor's degree in psychology from Rollins College.
She entered the world of social media via her blog in 2010 and has never looked back. She lives in Florida with her daughter, the Frog Princess, and tries not to pass on her love of café con leche to her child, and she is definitely failing. But you can visit her on her website, cilirizio.com, and let's get her on the line.
Yeah, let's do it. We're excited to have you. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate you very much.
Yes, and we really appreciate you.
We're so happy to have a Dominicana, you know.
Afro-Latina.
Thank you so much for having me. This was like, what? Yes, I'll do it.
Yeah. We're so excited. So we're just going to dive in.
Okay.
Yeah. So tell us about your name. You have a very interesting name. Where did it come from?
It's funny you should ask, because I was like, how am I going to answer this question? In the past, I've always answered it very, like, people always ask, well, where does the name come from? And I was like, oh, I don't know. My mom just made it up, right?
Yeah.
But actually, when my mom was 7 months pregnant, she had a dream. And in that dream, a deity came to her, a deity from 21 Divisions had come to her and told her that I was going to be a girl and that she shouldn't give me her name. And so my mom was like, listen, that sounds great, but I don't want my daughter having your name. And then what are people going to think? Right.
Yeah.
So of course my mom would be arguing with the deity in her dreams. Why not? Sure. Yeah. And so she, you know, she would always say that the deity kind of shrugged her shoulders, turned around and went to leave. And my mom was like, wait, you can't leave me with that. Like, you know, what should I do? And my mom always told that she kind of turned halfway to see my mom. And she said, give her the last four letters of my name.
Oh, wow.
And so that's where it comes from. That's where it comes from. So the deity is Mitra Sili. And so my name is Sili. For a long time, actually, my grandmother was the only one that called me Sili. Because I was like the accent was kind of left off. And I think my mom was perfectly okay with that because she still didn't want any association to a certain extent, because she didn't want me to be treated in any kind of, you know, weird or different way because of it.
Wow, that's really dope.
Yeah, that's a really, really great story that like this all came out of this dream and basically connecting to spirituality, right? Like, because yeah, it's absolutely a deity and all that stuff. And let's just jump into that, because you talk a lot about spirituality and like connecting to ancestors. And let's talk about that, because Dominican Republic, I grew up super, super Catholic, and I always was sort of put off by it for some reason. And I was lucky to have a mom who basically kind of let me do whatever. And we together started meditating, and like she does like metaphysics now and all this stuff. So, and we turned away from Catholicism. It just wasn't right for us. And I would love to hear about your experience with spirituality and
your journey.
Sure. I think, you know, a while ago I wrote something on the blog post about being raised in duality, because we were very much Catholic. And then there was this other thing, right, that a lot of times wouldn't be named. And especially I think for me, you know, mama and papa, which were my parents, you know, my second set of parents, they practiced, papa practiced Loa, mama practiced 21 divisions. And it was just part of their lives, right? I grew up with, you know, un cuarto de santo in the back, you know, mm-hmm. and they each had their own rooms. And like, I grew up with that. And I also grew up with her, you know, she was at church like on Sundays and, you know, several times during the week as well. So I grew up with that juxtaposition of religion. My mom was super open to whatever. Mommy used to say, like, she will walk into any church and it didn't matter to her, because what mattered to her was her faith. Mm-hmm. So I always had that in the back of my mind, that it doesn't matter. Like, religion is great. I mean, it's not, but you know, religion is like, okay, but what really matters is your faith. So mm-hmm. I stepped into it with that. And for a while, like when I was in college, I turned away from it because it was very much like, I'm in college now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am studying with the people and I am learning all of these things that, you know, other people don't know because I'm in college. And it became very much, you know, I think I left a lot of my instincts and a lot of what made me, mm-hmm. My gifts, kind of, I put them to the side because I wasn't sure how to integrate them with this, you know, society that told me that, you know, I was in school, I was a psychology major. So, you know, it was like, maybe I'm crazy because, you know, according to this textbook, right. If I'm thinking this, or if I see this, or, you know, I hear this, I must be crazy. Like, let me go look and, you know, diagnose myself in the DSM-4. Right. Mm-hmm. So it was difficult to relate to that, and not having anyone to really be able to talk about it was hard. So for a long time, I kept that part of me secret. And I think for a lot of us, when we grow up, especially people that practice, you know, African traditional religions on the island and everywhere else, you know, we're carrying the need for it to be a secret, just because that's how our you know, forefathers kept all these religions alive, was in secrecy and hiding behind, you know, hiding in plain sight behind all of the Catholic saints.
Yeah.
So I feel like now things are more open on every level. I think all of, when I look around and see all the different ATRs, it looks very much like people are just being very open with it and talking about it and sharing it and saying, you know, I think it was interesting when I went to a few years back when I was going to a new therapist, and they asked the religion, and it was so weird for me to not write Christian, right?
Yeah,
And so I never felt like Catholicism was for me, because I never understood that. I was always bothered by the fact that I had to have an intermediary.
Yeah. You know?
So as an adult, I actually started going to a non-denominational Christian church, and, you know, loved it. Like, your girl taught Sunday school, you know, like the whole shebang, right?
Yeah.
But it always came back to what my mom said, that it was really more about my faith. I could go into any church and, you know, find a home there because of what I carried with me.
Yeah, I was more like turned off because of, I felt like it was so, there were so many restrictions. And if Dominicans are anything, they're rebels. And I was like, how are we so into this Catholicism when we are all about breaking rules and like not doing what we're told to, that is right to do, you know? So I was like, I'm not into this. I'm not into this church thing and like telling me that I have to be this way and that way, like not into it at all.
Yeah. And I think I was talking to someone recently around just that, kind of how African traditional religions flourished in the Caribbean and maybe didn't do the same here in the States. Mm-hmm. And I always talk about how enslaved Africans, wherever they were, had to make a decision and a choice.
Yeah.
And especially I think here in the States, a lot of these traditions and religions did not survive because people literally had to make a decision of, I can live or I can die. And I always think about how deep in faith a lot of Black Americans are. And that's a testament to that, because those enslaved Africans had to do that in order to survive. So, you know, they're here because of that. So it's also, I think, for me to be able to celebrate that. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times across the board, if you look at it, you think, you know, these people just do whatever they want to and, you know, break all these rules, and they don't break that rule. And I think it's because of the fact that it was inculcated in their, like, in their being, in their DNA, to have to carry that on in order for them to survive. Like, it's literally survival.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such a great perspective.
Yeah. What advice do you have for like anyone who's trying to learn more or dig deeper into that, you know, our history, our African spiritual history? Because growing up just like her, Catholic, everything as I've gotten older is doing more research or finding out more, you know, when it comes to our history, when it comes to all these little loose ends or loose holes that just I never got an answer to. And spirituality is definitely one of them.
You know, I think start with your own families and ask, because I talk to people now and folks are always like, you know, I have that one uncle.
Right.
And I remember like weird things with that uncle, or, right, you know, or there's that aunt that they used to, you know, whenever everybody got sick, they would go to her. But I'm not really sure what happened.
Right.
I would say start with family. So one of the things that I feel a lot of times for me, a lot of like my grief about losing, you know, people I love is that it's that we lost some of that history and that we lost, you know, some of the ways and the gifts that they carried because they didn't talk about it. So I tell folks all the time, please, please start with your family that's alive now, because you won't have them forever. And having that information is really important. And then sit with it and see what as you're looking through and as you're researching, what do you connect with?
Yeah.
That's the other thing. I see a lot of people hopping from one thing to the other. And you also need to be very centered in yourself and who you are. Because a lot of times people come to religion across the board, right, to be able to find themselves. And a lot of times that leads to people being taken advantage of, to, you know, people losing their own faith because they run into folks that aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. And it causes an issue later on. So I always tell folks, start with your people and talk to them.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned like people that pass, because like two of my closest, like my aunt, she was that tia that had the santos that called me Prieta because it was based on one of her santos, you know? Yeah. And she said I reminded her of one of her deities. And it's funny because I'm always trying to connect with her now that she's passed, as well as my grandmother, because now there are ancestors and there are our angels. So do you have any other suggestions on how to connect with those that have passed?
I do it. And I tell people, you know, after asking their family members that are alive, I don't care what you practice. Like, you could be a Christian, you could be a Muslim. It doesn't matter to me. Always start with your ancestors. that's kind of where you go to before you step into any religion or anything like that. Always start there. We've lost, I think, throughout the years, our veneration of our ancestors, our veneration of our dead. So I tell folks, start there. And it doesn't have to be, you know, I have a whole room, right? I have a whole Santa room, mm-hmm. but that's, you know, like people feel like they need to start like, oh, what does your look like? Don't worry about what mine looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
start simple. Like you literally a glass of water, a candle, you know, a white candle, a picture of your ancestors, if you have them, you can put flowers there. If you know that, you know, your tia like to smoke, maybe put some cigarettes there, mm-hmm. you know, things like that for you to be able to do. And it's just a way for you. It's a place for you that you can sit and meditate. It's very much, I tell people, like, there is no right way to do it. You have to go with what you know about your family and maybe what you feel. Sometimes even I was talking to one of my cousins and she was like, you know, we didn't have this tradition. And she caught herself and she said, but not having a tradition was a tradition.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So yeah.
Even as you're looking at these things, I think that it's important for you to just have a place and go and sit and, you know, you can light your candle on whatever day you choose and sit and meditate and talk to them and ask for guidance there.
Yeah.
They're always around us. So it's really interesting when people, you know, are like, well, what's, you know, how do I get them to come talk to me? You know, and it's like, well, you know, like, I don't know what to tell you because it depends on your gift. Different ancestors kind of, you know, show up in different ways to different people too. So it's, there's not one way that it happens. And I think a lot of times folks are disappointed when they maybe start looking and start reading and start, you know, trying to connect with their ancestors and they're like, well, you know, I didn't see nobody show up. Or, you know, I didn't hear nothing. Let me tell you something. The scariest thing you're going to ever experience is if you ever see any spirit popping up. Like, right, it's not like in the movies.
Right.
Like, you actually don't want that.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You should be like, thank you very much for not showing up.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, these things are super jarring, right? That's the last thing that you're going to want to do. But everyone, it happens differently for everyone. And I think that honoring that individuality too is important.
Yeah. And you have your own unique way of communicating with them. Once you start creating that communication or being open to the process, I think that just like, I don't know, some people read the book, The Alchemist, and they talk about like the universe giving you signs and messages. There's messages everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think people also think ancestors sometimes has to be like ancestors from like back in the day, yeah. like 200 years ago. Yeah. It's also the people that have passed in your immediate environment or circle or family.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be even, you know, it's someone that it doesn't have to be blood related. We have people that are assigned to us in death by divine order that, mm-hmm. you know, protect us, that follow us. And that's something that I think people often forget too.
Yeah.
You went an entire year just wearing white.
I did.
Kid.
We did our research.
Yeah, we did our research too.
Reading stuff and stalking people.
Yeah. We so hard. I would love to hear about that. I just thought that was, my mom, who I love and connect with, when my grandmother passed last summer, and she was like, we're all wearing white. We're not wearing black. Like, we're going to celebrate her and we're going to wear bright colors. And that was both for, what is it when everyone comes and sees the body before it's
been?
For the viewing. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I forgot what that was called. Yeah. Asked everyone to please wear white and to celebrate and to like bring music. And mm-hmm. and even for the burial, it was like, you know, people were in like, yeah, we were like, no black. We don't want it. We don't want that. So when I read that you just wore white for a whole year, I was like, oh my God, what's that about? Is that, was that celebration or healing or can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So I, in February 2nd of 2019. I feel like, what year was that? I initiated into the Lukumi religion. So I went through they call it Cariocha, they call it crowning, you know, there are different names for it. Mm-hmm. And it's basically the beginning of your journey to become a priestess.
Oh, cool.
And so I was gone for 7 days. I was under... they call it a trono. They set up this really beautiful room and all kinds of fun things that I cannot talk about happen during that time. But one of the things and one of the ways that we give back to Orishas is that 1 year commitment of the year in white. And there are a lot of restrictions. I lost my name during that year. So I was not called Sili. I was called Yawo. And everyone's called Yawo during that time. And that literally means Bride of Orisha. Wow. And so I went for that whole year with my restrictions, with wearing white, with covering my hair when I went out. So it was intense. It was an intense year. It was a beautiful year. I wouldn't change it for the world. Mm-hmm. But it was a commitment that I made when I crowned. And I'm crowned with the Orisha Oya.
Oh, wow. That's so cool.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm so glad I asked you about that.
Yeah. I'm glad you did too.
Yeah. That is a commitment, a year of like really self-reflection and transformation.
Yeah. And I couldn't, the thought of not having your name is also very interesting too, because that's such a personal attachment and to be called.
And you know, like during the process, the idea is like that during the ceremonies and the initiations, you die. The person that you were dies and you're born again. Right. So we think about baptism. We think about all of these other things in relation to what makes sense to a lot of people, like other religions. Right. But it is that you die and you are given a new name. And then during that year, you just, you know, addressed in that way. And it's beautiful in the community. You know, you see a Yawo and it's like, you get so excited to see them.
Yeah.
Yawos has come in all ages. They have, you have, Yawos says you have kids that crown, you have people that crown as children. And so you see them around wearing, and they're pretty recognizable, right? The whole white kind of gives them away.
They're
wearing their leques, they're usually wearing manillas that they have to wear. And so they're pretty recognizable. And it's, I still had to do a lot of travel for work during that year.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. The other thing is some of the taboos is like, I couldn't be touched by people that were not crowned.
Wow.
So that was, interesting. Handshakes kind of went away.
No,
I always tell people that like that year, because I came out of my year of February and then like we hit the pandemic. So I was like, I feel like my year was just extended.
Right.
All the restrictions. But yeah, couldn't be touched and all that stuff. But it was something else to be out and to have someone that was crowned or was part of the religion identify you. And, there's a way, there's a greeting that happens. And so to kind of see that, I would like get that at the airports. I would get that at random places. And it was just, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful experience.
Very cool.
Wow.
Really great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we've all seen people dressed in white. Like I've seen people that they say they're doing a promise, a promesa, as well. And they're, whatever they prayed for or something, the white is connected to that as well. I don't know if you know Queen Afua. She does like holistic health and she has a training for like women to go through, and they have to wear white for an extended period of time as they're cleansing and as they're transforming. So a lot of meanings as well to just taking, it's all about taking that time to self-reflect, right? And go deep within ourselves.
Absolutely. And I love what you all mentioned before about like wearing different colors when someone passes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We were, for my mom, everybody wore lavender. That was
thing.
And we had done that for my grandmother when she passed too. But I think also we have this, in this culture, we're very fearful of death. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that, I have been forced into talking a lot about it because of my loss of my mother. Mm-hmm. But also I think because of the Orisha that I'm crowned, there's an association with this Orisha in particular and death and spirit. So we end up talking about it a lot, but I love to hear how people celebrate their ancestors. And I love to hear like, what happened? Like, what did you guys do at the funeral? That was cool. That was something, celebratory. So it's good to hear.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, I love that you guys face death, right? Because like in our culture, everything is fear a lot of times. Oh my God, somebody's gonna die because se murió este, que fulano, que le dio, whatever. And like I lost a parent really young. And so I lost my dad really young. And I, you know, now I have my mom, and always, you know, I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, one day that day is gonna come. But I think death can come to anyone at any age, especially right. with all the things that we're going through. It's like that whole idea of just facing that fear of whatever it is, when the symbolism of death and facing whatever death means to you is mm-hmm. very liberating as well.
Yeah, it is. And I think we don't talk about it enough. And it's
yeah,
like we're all going to experience it. It doesn't matter what, you know, where you live, what you do, what you look like. We're all going to be there someday. And so it's something that it's important for you to talk about. You know, yeah. What I planned, that's the other thing, like things change. What I plan to do before, you know, what I had talked to my family about, my wishes before changed after I crowned, right? Because then things had to change, and I couldn't do this thing and I couldn't do that thing. And so just keep talking about it. My siblings and I, you know, are super open with it, and people get really freaked out about it.
Right.
You know? Like we're always like, you know, don't be opening no casket. Like sometimes I feel, especially in the Caribbean community, there's this obsession of seeing the body.
And there is.
And like, it's a weird, like people take pictures of people in caskets, which is a weird thing to me. And I'm always like, you know what? No, I want that clothes. Y'all put a nice little hot picture. I don't care how old I am. I could be 85. Y'all better get a nice picture with my boobs out.
Yeah.
Like, you know, in front of the casket. That's what we want to do. So people, you know, and I think the last way for you to love someone is making sure that
their wishes are honored.
You've talked about that, right?
Yeah. Because there's so much
that's left behind. And we just had a, you know, an OG blogger, a friend in the blogging community, pass away this past week. Mm. So, you know, I had the chance to talk to her about some of that before she passed, and, you know, just talking to her mom about it. And it's a beautiful gift, and you won't experience anything else. I tell people all the time, I had the privilege of, you know, being there and seeing my mom take a last breath. And the only thing I can compare it to is having given birth to my daughter. And mm-hmm. I am a big believer in dignity in death and making sure that, you know, people are cared for during that time, because it's a beautiful experience. The same as when, you know, when we're going to be giving birth, it's very, very similar.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah,
well, I have a friend who her mom like keeps bringing her different outfits of what she wants for the funeral. She'll be like, okay, so I changed my mind. Here's a turtleneck because I don't like the way the neck be looking on people when they die. So mm-hmm. I want this top instead. And like every month she brings her a new outfit randomly.
I like it. And I also think it's really weird. Like in I don't know if there's a term for this in English. In Spanish, the word is mortaja. Have you guys heard of that?
Mm. No, I haven't.
It's like the last out, like the dead outfit. I think that's what it is. I have to go back and look, because it's such a weird thing that there's like a name for the clothes that you're going to wear. You know?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. That's so funny.
I feel like, is that it? Now I'm questioning myself. Like, is that the word? But there is a word.
There is a word for the dead outfit.
Whether that's what it was, because it just kind of popped in my head when you said that. But yeah, it's like a strange, why are y'all giving special names to dead people clothes?
Right.
I'm going to do a little turn here and talk about your motivational thuggery, which I heard, like, you know, they're like, the smaller episodes you have on Spotify, like I love that, like mind your business.
mind your business.
Let's talk about it. First of all, let's talk about this title, motivational thuggery.
Your motivational.
You know, it's funny you say that after I said what I said earlier. The first time I used those words was with my friend Kimberly, who just passed.
Oh wow!
And she's the one that gave me like. She's like, because that's what you're a motivational thug, because I yell at my friends a lot and I cuss them out a lot because sometimes they need it. Like, you know, and I think it comes to from seeing the best in people and knowing where people can be, or, you know, seeing that vision, like from a spiritual perspective of where they will be and just pushing. I'm a little direct in that way. I mean, and sometimes, you know, you have to treat people with a certain level of grace and kid gloves, so to speak. But for the most part, like when we get to a point where, you know, it's like, yo, why have, like, you're amazing. What the hell are you waiting for? Right. Mm-hmm. What's happening, you know? And so she would always joke with me, and she used that term. And literally, like, that day, I think I went, like, and bought, you know, bought the URL. I also have a URL buying problem, but that's, you know, not even out there. But so it just kind of stuck. And actually she drew the logo for me as well.
Oh, that's sweet.
And so it was just like this funny thing that just kicked off. And now I was like, okay, what am I going to do? So I did like the Instagram. So I would do these, you know, these images with these sayings, because we see all the inspirational stuff. Right? Yeah. But sometimes, you know, like you need a little bit more.
Yeah.
You need
yeah.
a little bit more. You, yeah. you know, you've been slacking. You've heard, you've read all the nice books. You've, you know, read all pretty words. And now you need to hear the real words. And so that's kind of how that was born, really being able to kind of snatch your edges with a little love is you know, joke around with it. And I started doing the podcast, and it was super, you know, little short bits, because a lot of times I feel like people, you know, don't have a lot of time. And then after that, I paused for a while. And then I feel like the IG live kind of is part of that, you know?
Yeah. 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 We noticed
Yeah.
That
you
too.
Moved on to Cafe con Sili.
Yeah. And it's, you know, that's why I use thuggery in there, you know, talking thuggery, because that's part of it. I think it just kind of flows well with it. I am accused regularly of snatching people's edges. I take a lot of pride in that because I do it with love. I want us to all succeed, and I want us to all be living our best lives. And I also know that, you know, sometimes y'all don't be listening to pretty words. I mean, that's just the reality of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some people need the cold hard truth sometimes. I'm one of those people. I do well with that.
Sometimes someone just needs to like shake the shit out of you, like just shake you, and you know, get to the point. Yeah, yeah, you need that sometimes. Yeah,
and you do need friends that are brutally honest with you. You know, I think sometimes people don't want to hear it, but sometimes you don't want to hear it. But you need to have those friends or those people that hold you accountable for the things that you are saying that you want to do, right?
Absolutely.
So yeah, we need motivational thuggery in our lives.
Yeah.
We need a motivational thug every so often. So in Cafe con Sili,
I'm here for y'all.
Oh, please. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah. In Cafe con Sili, you've had really cool guests too. Tell
thank
us
you.
More about that. Cause I've been watching, and I like seeing the B side as well. I like the B side.
Yeah.
The B side is just because we talk so much.
But it gets deep in the B-side.
It does. And, you know, it just kind of float that way. I hadn't planned for it at all. And so, you know, I started this literally. I don't plan for it. Like, I love y'all. We're so organized. I was like, look at this. I'm going to take notes. Look at this organization here. Because literally I'd be like, you know, combing my hair and, you know, at 6:55 right before I go on.
That's
and then
hilarious.
Be like, what am I going to ask? Because I don't write it down.
Right.
Like I have one question that I ask and that's it.
But it flows.
But it's, you know, it's just one of those things that I think the B-side grew from. I noticed that as conversations started happening inevitably, or I mean, for whatever reason, right? Like there are no coincidences. We would go into some type of spiritual discussion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, it was, I didn't want to rush like that last 10 minutes of the show. I didn't want to rush through it. So I was like, you know, we're just going to like, end, you know, end the first part, and then give ourselves more time to go into more discussion around spirituality, because I think too that discussion leads very well into the question, you know, the last question that I asked. So.
Yeah, I distinctively remember the one with Negra con Tumbao. That was very deep. The deep side
that was
of that
a little intense.
I was like, what? That was the first one I watched, and I was like, whoa.
Oh, I'm sorry to you. I am so. Ooh,
this is
okay.
Deep.
Yeah, that was a lot.
Yeah. But it was good. It was good. It, you guys went deep. It was talking about like mediums and like, you know?
Yeah.
Experience
that was,
and stuff.
That was intense. We had our friend's grandmother showed up.
Yeah.
So that was, and I never think about, you're giving me something to think about, because I never think about like, what if somebody like jumps in for the first time?
That was me.
right here, like, oh, okay, well, that's not gonna freak them out at all, right?
Well, no, I mean, I think if you're seeking, right, like, I mean,
right,
because yeah. I happen and to we've click
had
on that
happen before, like we've had yeah. in our circle, we'll have, you know, we'll be having conversations, we'll be having a chat or something, and then somebody shows up and then we're like, hey, who has, you know, we start going
that's
going
great.
Through the thing, who is this? And so that was a sweet thing, I think, because Xenia's grandmother is very proper. She was Catholic, you know, and she waited. And I was feeling something over here. I don't want to say anything because I was like, you know, you deal with them. I don't want anybody coming over my house.
That's right, the thing. Right, right.
To do that with each other, like, not for me. And when she, you know, but it was just like a very, like, she was really nice and she waited and she asked, you know, for the Lord's Prayer before she was able to speak. So it was interesting.
Yeah. I was watching and I'm like, is this what I think it is?
I was like, what?
I was like, cool. Wait, hang
on. Yeah.
I was like, cool. Yeah. Like, cool. Let's have her on the show.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully she'll come on
yeah,
the show.
Cool. Yeah, I love that. I mean, this is why we have the podcast, you know, all of alt, you know, the things that the gray areas, you know, that we don't necessarily get introduced to all the time. Yeah. The B side of the world, you know.
Yep. Yeah. So, and one of those things is spirituality for yeah. me. You know, it was such a gray area in our family. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, we talked about that already.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go on. I'm the focus point person here. I'm going to move on to your amazing book.
Mm-hmm.
Yay.
Tell us about that.
We have it. Look.
Awesome.
If Dominican were yes, color.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Oh my God.
Like, I cannot wait to get my niece and nephew this book.
Thank
yes.
you so much.
Yes. It's Tell it. Us all about it. What inspired you to write it? Everything, because it's beautiful and so needed.
So, you know, I the first iteration of If Dominican Were Color was actually an adult poem.
Oh.
And it's somewhere. I think it's somewhere on my blog. I can't remember. I've like posted it. I've shared it in different spaces. And so when I shared a link to the blog, it was January 2017. And I shared it on Facebook, and Deneen Milner, I won't cuss in the middle of that because I have like a middle name for her that's a cuss word because she's so amazing. She had come on and we have been talking about children's books. I mean, she has a children's book imprint. And so I remember her coming onto the thread, and I told someone this week, I threatened to go back and look for the actual post so I could take a screenshot of what she said, but I believe she just said, this is the book. And so she's like, just, you know, make it for kids.
Yeah.
And probably by the end, I think I went to sleep with a version of this book that night. And so it was seamless. I know that people don't want to, like, people want to hear about like all the struggles and writing and all that, but it was seamless. It was easy. And it was an exercise in patience because that happened in 2017. She was with a different publisher at the time. So, you know, there was a lot of wait, you know, hurry up and wait time. And then when she went to Simon, I think this was one of the first books that she presented.
Wow.
And I got the call that they love the book, which is, you know, like, you write stuff. I write stuff all the time and
yeah,
love things, but it doesn't mean that other people love it.
Yeah, of course.
So it was so weird to hear that other people, you know, like, loved it as much as I wanted them to. And so, you know, before then I'd gotten a book agent, and so they loved it. They've been like talking about it, which is, again, sometimes it's surreal. But I got the call from Denise that she had presented the book and that she, and that they wanted the book, as I was packing my car to go to my initiation.
Mm, wow.
That was, you know, February 2019.
Wow.
Of course.
And it was I always tell people it was my initiation gift.
Oh.
And then as I came out of my year, we had the cover reveal. So that was, you know, so it was like little gifts.
Yeah.
And to be, you know, picked up by Simon and Schuster, I can never say that word. Schuster, Simon. That's a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a huge deal.
It's huge.
Did you debate between like publishing it yourself versus
no
company? Okay.
I've self-published, like I self-published a book of poetry eons ago. And I just didn't have any, I didn't have any desire to do that. And just having someone like Deneen's been in the industry for so long, has written so many books, is, you know, she's like a 27 time New York Times bestseller.
Wow.
And so to have someone validate that, that work and just love it so much and be able to take me in and kind of, you know, take me through the journey. Mm-hmm. I would not, I don't think I would have published this book with anyone but Deneen on their books.
Right.
And it was important to me because she is very much about, all of her books are, around the Black experience. So that was, that was, I think, a big thing for me.
And I love the author's note at the end. I have to read a little bit about it because it's so beautiful.
I will try not to cry while you read it.
Okay. I was like, oh my God, this is so beautiful. This is for the little Black boys and girls who have yet to step into their power and magic because society leans on its own biases and tell them that they're not worthy. This book is for those who proudly check that black box on the census because they know exactly who they are. And for those, too, who are just figuring it out, whether they age 4 or age 40. The island is full of color, as is the world. I celebrate it and you. Because you're Black and I don't want you to forget it.
It's really beautiful. I'm crying.
I know. I was like, oh my gosh, where was this book when I was a kid?
And I've heard that so much. I mean, I get people sending me messages on DMs, on Instagram, on social. And that's been the statement. Like if I had a statement that I could say, like, how do people feel about the book? It's been that. A lot of adults coming in and saying, this is a book that I needed as a child.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's so beautiful. Yeah. I mean, the colors in it are great. And I love that, like, the colors describe the island and, like, the beauty of the island and the beauty of the people. And it really doesn't just, you know, it doesn't even say, like, she's Black or, you know, he's white. It's just, like, there are colors everywhere. Mm-hmm. And we love all of it. And it's all love, you know, and diversity and creativity. And it's just a powerful, powerful book.
Yeah. My favorite is my grandmother's mahogany skin, honey brown eyes, my other grandmother's yellow tint, just like mine. Because, yeah, we do come in different colors. My grandma looks like that. My other grandma looks like that, you know?
And it's, you know, and a lot of times we don't talk about it.
No.
And so, like, my, you know, one of my grandmothers passed when my dad was 6. So I never got a chance to meet her. And so it was important for me to include her. And in the Spanish version of the book, I actually named them. I felt it was really beautiful. Important for me to use their names as I'm calling, you know, because I dedicate the book to my ancestors. And so it was really important for me to name them, her specifically, because I'm actually, I'm her namesake. So I have her middle name. Mm-hmm. And so it was really important for me to name it.
Yeah.
Wow.
And where is in Dominican Republic is your family from? Were you born here or in Dominican Republic?
I was born there. I was born in the capital.
Like, me too.
Sometimes that everybody's born in the capital.
Yeah, I know, right? Everybody.
But my my mom is was from Moca and my dad is from Bonao.
Cool. Okay, my mom's from Moca too. Look at that.
Probably cousins.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My mom's from Boca Chica. I don't know.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm in the capital too.
That's my favorite beach in the whole wide world.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
we forgot to ask you. So how do you identify these days? You know how like some people, we've been on this whole journey of like, you know, self-identity and like some people, they're like, I'm an Afro-Latina. Some people are like, I'm Dominican. Some people are like, I'm an Afro-Dominican. Some people are like, I'm Black.
Right. So we're going to talk about this. Okay. We're going to get into it.
Yeah. Let's get into it, please. Let's get into it.
Because I feel like, and I keep having these discussions in like, you know, private spaces, but I feel like we need to, when we talk about this, we need to bring a lot of grace into the discussion because so many people didn't have the language earlier on or didn't understand the language earlier on. Were not exposed to the language earlier on to be able to say that they were Black, right? So I always tell folks, I know some people are like, you know, these new Black people, right? They just popped out and, you know, they were last week. But sometimes people didn't understand, didn't have the lexicon for it, or we're not empowered to use it, right? And that's part of why I wrote the author's note, because people aren't, and some people are just finding that out. Right. I used to have I had a professor, so I had a Dominican girl that I went to school with, Nancy, and it was great. We talked about her last week on the show, because she was, you know, probably my first experience of like a blackity black Dominican, right? And I don't even mean to say that in like what she looked like, but in the truth and who she was and what she was about. Mm-hmm. And she was an upperclassman. So it was great to be able to come into that and be given the freedom to step into that same role, and not a role, but like step into that same idea, because I felt all those things, but I always kept them on the inside because I didn't want to cause any issues. Right. I knew who I was. My dad was very clear on who I was. My dad came here in the late 60s. You know, he was used to being called all kinds of names, you know, living in New York.
Yeah.
And so knowing that and being aware of that, I've always known that I come from blackness.
Yeah.
Right. And then people started using Afro, right? Afro Latino, Afro Dominican. And that was great too. But a lot of times I feel like people use that term because they have a hard time forming the word black in their mouth.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And some of that is a comfort level, you know, so I try to give grace in that. Some of that is a comfort level, and it's them working through their trauma, working through their own experience. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then, you know, like, let's support them. And sometimes it's the fact that, you know, they don't want to say black because there's still a level of anti-blackness that they have to work through.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, and we need to also name that. It's important for me to name that. And for a long time, I tell people all the time, like, I don't think, when I was a kid, I never came out. I was like, I'm black, or I'm a black Latina. You know, those weren't words that were used. Yeah. I just knew who I was. And so for me, I sit in blackness. I center blackness. I say sometimes in certain spaces, I'll say Afro Latina, and in certain spaces I'll say black, and it's not even anything. I think I just go back and forth with it. Sometimes I feel like I need to go in and lean into black Latina in a way, because I want other people to feel comfortable with that and to feel comfortable using that term.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know if me using it is going to help, like, you know, I don't know who listens to me, but you know, they might see themselves in me and be comfortable with it and know that there's a safety there, because I know I was given that safety. Nelsie was my safety to be able to step into my blackness. Not that I hadn't stepped into it, but being able to step into it at a time when in college, you're like finding out who you are, mm-hmm. you're figuring all these things, you know, these things out. And we used to have a professor, Dr. Manuel Vargas. He is Dominican. Mm-hmm. He was hilarious because he had like this Afro. I'll never forget. He had like an Afro, but he was also balding, which was scary. Sorry, Manuel, it was funny. But he would tell the story. He was an anthropology professor, and he would tell the story that he didn't realize he was black until he came to the United States.
Wow.
And then you'd be like, have you looked in the mirror?
Right.
But this is what happens. And this is our experience.
Absolutely.
And we need to be able to hold space for when that happens, as well as hold space for the people that have known their entire lives that this is who they are. So it's like a long, drawn out answer, but I think we need to talk about it more. And I think especially on the island, especially with, you know, I think the island as a whole, and how blackness is seen sometimes, and how there's xenophobia having to do with Haiti, and how, you know, like all of these things have to be discussed. There are people that are having very visceral reactions to that verse that I have in the book, the Haitian black on my Dominican back. People that are like, you know, I saw something where someone shared. So an account shared the book. They shared some of the interiors, and somebody came in and was like, why are Haitians being mentioned here? This is a book about Dominicans. Like, it was very, and I knew that was going to happen. That was a phrase that was in the English, in the adult poem. Mm-hmm. And I felt very strongly about leaving it in there, because a lot of times, and it wasn't a discussion of, oh, this is the only, you know, like Haitians are the only black people, right, on the island. That's not how it was meant. It was meant that we can't get away from it. Like, this is us. And it was, for me, I wanted to make sure that I also, you know, the book was about being Dominican, but I could not write a book without including Haitians in it.
Of course.
for me, it was very important. And it's like, there's two sides to the coin, right? Mm-hmm. We have, you know, whether you identify as being Black or not, we can't get away from Haiti. We can't get away from our Haitian roots.
Yeah, right? No, we cannot.
And it's important. It was important for me too, because I, as I've been doing research, I'm finding out with my family that, you know, my dad's mom was either, you know, I'm looking into the information, was either was born in Haiti or was you know, had Haitian parents and was born on the border. So that was also, you know, extremely important. I found this out after, mm-hmm. you know, all the writing, but I also feel that it wasn't a coincidence in what I felt. And a lot of times I just feel like that I was being led to do that because I didn't have the whole story at the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's really beautiful. I mean, that's why we're doing this podcast. And the listeners will probably be sick of me saying this, but the journey of me being just me, look at me. I'm so Black. And the journey of me being able to say that took forever. I probably got comfortable saying I was Black when I was like in my mid 20s. Finally, yeah. You know, and it took me a really, really long time. And I feel like there was just trauma and pain and hurt there from, you know, what and like nobody told me growing up, hate your Blackness or it's better to be white or anything like that. Nobody told me those things. It was just something ingrained. Like I felt like in a way I was born with it, or like whatever visual things or, you know, like subliminal signs out there telling me to avoid it.
It's not even subliminal. Like I saw, and I have to find it again. I saw that they had done this study in Dominican Republic where they took, you know, like 7-year-olds, right? And they showed them these dolls and they asked all these questions, like who's good and who's bad. And, you know, mm-hmm. at seven, these Dominican babies knew that the bad baby of the two was the Black baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
And I am sure that no one, you know, was holding mm-hmm. up, you know, Black baby dolls like this is a bad thing, but it's taught. It's implicit. Like,
yeah,
it's so implicit.
Yes.
In the way that, you know, I didn't wear my hair curly until I was an adult. I was a grown ass person. Like I was in my late 20s, early 30s. And even then, like I saw my hair was relaxed when I was 4 by a family member who thought I had unruly hair, just putting that out there. Mm-hmm. And so I relaxed my hair for a long time. I didn't stop relaxing my hair until my late 20s. And even then I would wear it straight, but I you know, I wasn't completely comfortable. And it wasn't until, I mean, I would leave it, you know, I would have it loose, and it took that. It took me being, because I had to have a whole conversation with my mom, because sometimes I would go to work with my hair curly and she would make these comments, and it wasn't coming straight out and saying it, but it was, I felt for a long time, and I realized it was, again, that implicit bias that had been mm-hmm. taught to me. I didn't feel like a professional if I didn't, you know, if my hair was like big and curly, right? Because I had to look a certain way. And one of my best friends did her dissertation on hair in the diaspora.
Wow, and so that's dope.
The studies, y'all, like the questionnaire and all that stuff, people were discerning whether a person was a Christian, whether they had a college education, whether they, you know, had a good job, solely based on hair.
Yeah.
Right. And then the joke was that it was the same person with different wigs. That was the whole joke.
That's great. The same person with different wigs. That's awesome.
It was. It was like she had one person that like just wore different, you know, different hair. And so, and it was that. And it, you know, it took me a long time and I had to sit mommy down and be like, listen, this is my hair. This is the hair that grows out of my head. Yeah. I can't have you continue to make these comments because it makes me feel bad. I remember feeling bad when she used to have to, she felt like she had to excuse my hair somehow when I was younger. And I never, you know, my hair was in rollers. At 4, my hair was in rollers. Like I have an aversion to rollers now as an adult. Mm-hmm. Cause that's all I spent, you know, once a week, I had to have my hair washed, mm-hmm. and that's what had to happen. Cause how else would I wear my hair? And the level of stress that builds, if you think about it.
Oh my God, it's so stressful. And it's
you
like,
you can't be out of town, girl. You can't be out of town where your role is at. Like, yeah. You know, it's this, all of these things that you have to plan for to be able to suppress that part of you.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's and so, hard. Yeah, there's a lot of trauma there.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Well, you have a lovely daughter too, right? So, how has that been? I mean, she's growing up in a completely different environment, right, than we did. How has that been? I mean, her mama wrote an amazing book. You know, she gets to see you doing all these really cool things.
She's sick of my book. Oh, she doesn't and I think part of it is she's like, I already know about it. Like, I think the waiting for this long, the excitement has lost its, you know, its shine. But it was when I was very intentional when I would like comb her hair when she was little. And she's got, y'all, she like, I have a lot of hair. She probably has like twice the amount of hair I have. And she just recently cut it. She actually asked to cut it, which was super interesting. But it was down, you know, down to her mid back. And so it was a 3-hour process of, you know, detangling and doing all this. But from the minute that I sat her, you know, between my legs to do her hair, I remember just combing it and being like, oh my gosh, your hair looks so good. Your hair feels so nice. Have you smelled your hair today? You know, it was like pouring all of this because I didn't have that, because something was wrong with my hair when I was growing up, and I was never able to feel good about it. So it was important for me to do that for her. And then as soon as she got old enough, you know, I realized too that I needed to stop wearing my hair straight. Like, I love the fact that I could do whatever I want to with my hair, but I was very intentional about making sure that she saw
curly,
you know, curly. She saw my hair natural. And that, because I wanted to be able to reflect, you know, her when she saw me.
Yeah. Like, I have a friend that she, you know, her daughter has always had her beautiful curly hair. And then she went to school, of course, and she came back and she's like, nope, I don't want any curly hair. I want my hair straight, blown out. Why? Because most of the little girls in the school had their hair straight and she didn't want to stand out. She said, I don't want to look different. I want to look like everybody else. So, you know,
kids make comments too.
Yeah.
You know, kids have, I know that one, my daughter loves Bantu knots. She actually spent the week in Bantu knots. And for one picture day, she wanted like these two big Bantu knots in the front. And, you know, she was just being extra. And I think one day she also went in and she was like, she told me that the girls were like, what happened to your hair? Ugh. Like, what, why is your hair like that? You know? And of course she's like, what are you talking about?
Good for her.
We have to have these conversations, you know, often. So she, like, when she was, I think, 4 or 5, a little white Puerto Rican kid in her class called her black and ugly. So we had to kind of, at that age, had to like start, you know, these discussions. I tell folks all the time, I'm not raising a child, right? I'm raising a black woman in America. So, you know, what does that look like? Mm-hmm. And being able to feed her what she needs and protect her. And, you know, my goal is to make sure that she is always surrounded by black excellence, because in all of its different forms, right? Artists, illustrators, writers, you know, whatever that looks like. So that she knows that she can do anything. And she has that, like, I tell people all the time, she's got an attitude about it. Right. And it feels different than like when we were kids. Cause she's like, you wrote a book. Okay. Then, you know, like, I'll write a book, or like, she just knows that she can do all of these things.
Yeah.
And it's easy for her, you know, like when we met President Obama a few years back when she was younger, and it happened to have been that the thing that was happening here was happening right before I had to speak in DC, at an event. And so, and she travels with me to my conferences. So the next day, you know, we're getting ready to leave, and she's like, well, are we going to go by the White House and have a play date with his daughters? And
I'm like, let me arrange that. Let me see if they're available.
Right. Cause she's just like, you know, like, this is normal for her. So being able to normalize excellence.
That's right. That's dope.
All the time. And to be able to do that in a way that will also help her in those spaces when I'm not there. Right. Cause it's easy for her to feel empowered and be sassy around me. We always talk about her. Like, she tends to be a little bit shy when she's not in my space. And so making sure that she has the language that she has, and that she has the confidence to be able to stand up for herself and also educate other folks when she's around, because sometimes, you know, kids are getting what their parents are giving them. And so it's important for her to have, it's important for me that she have the right language to be able to not, you know, to stand in her own black excellence.
Yeah.
Facts.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. That's so, like, inspiring. Now, now you're giving me faith. I've always been like, I don't want no kids. And now I'm like, maybe I will raise a beautiful black little baby.
Of course you will.
Coming
in here talking about a
black woman in America.
Need child support afterwards.
I know, right? No, we're going to need you to call us with the motivational thug. When I call you when the kids are not listening.
All right. We're going to start wrapping up with our questions we ask everybody. Yes. And the first
for this quiz, I should tell you I didn't study for the quiz. But go ahead.
Okay. Even better.
What are your three favorite things about Dominican culture?
I love the people. Mm. Like there is nothing like, you know, going to the countryside and running into people and just their authenticity and the way that they love on you. Always like it, I'm always taken aback by it. I'm always taken aback by the way that I think as a culture, Dominicans are just able to open up and love other people. Mm-hmm. I love that. I love the humility I find in folks. And I don't know. I always feel like when I meet those folks, and obviously, you know, not a general statement because, you know, we have some folks that aren't so nice, but I always feel like I'm home when I meet someone like that. I always feel like I've met some family member or some, you know, some long lost relative. Mm-hmm. And I love that other people kind of identify that. I've spoken to folks that have traveled to the island. It's always interesting to me to hear that being, you know, told back to me because it's one of my favorite things. Mm. So that's the first. And I think food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have to talk about food.
Yes.
Because it's a love language. It's a whole love language. Yeah. Right. And being able to have like all of these things that I now make for my daughter. Mm. They're uniquely. So we talk about how, you know, like there's just all these discussions about, you know, identity and her making sure that she understands that she is bicultural. Right. And I always make the joke like that, you know, you like mac and cheese and arroz con habichuelas, right. That's kind of what it is. Mm-hmm. That's my simple way of explaining culture to her, through food. But I think being loved through food as well, mm-hmm. is something that, I don't know. I just, like, I want to make some lentejas right now and talk to you. But I think, you know, the food, and then I think the island itself. So you talked about being from Boca Chica. That's literally like my favorite place in the world. Mm. And I'm sure I'll visit some amazing places. We went to Hawaii last year. We did all this stuff, but there's nothing like sitting at the edge of the water. Mm-hmm. On your island. Mm. Mm-hmm. And as much as, you know, there are problems on the island and there's issues and like all of this stuff, right, that we talk about and we think about and we understand, there's nothing like it.
Yeah.
I think for me, that water is a balm. It's a cleanser. It brings me back closer to the people that I come from. So it's not like a culture thing, but it's super important to me because so many folks, you know, I think like if you grew up on an island, you just know that there's a beach somewhere.
Right.
And a lot of times here, it's like, you know, some people will be like, have you considered moving? And I'm like, no, because there's no beaches by it. Like, that sounds crazy. I would never move to that state. How do you live? How do you, like, I don't understand it. The Midwest is like a thing, like a foreign concept to me. You might as well have told me that you like live in Mars. Yeah. I have anxiety thinking about not being close to the water.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, what I love when I get to DR, when I go, is the smell. You know, when you get off the airport.
Yes.
Oh my God.
There's nothing like it. You'll travel the world and you will not find.
Yeah.
You will not find it.
It's just like the sweetest smell.
Yeah.
And then like the way the humidity just hits you. Yeah. And again, I live in Florida, so I know humidity, but it's different.
Very different. Very different.
Walking down the street, like smelling all of the food stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn, I'm gonna have to take a trip soon. Back again. Okay, last question, which you've sort of answered, but how do you amplify the Afro in Afro-Dominican these days?
I think I am just authentically myself. Mm-hmm. And I give people permission to be themselves, whether or not they've been given that permission before. I think sometimes seeing me allows other people to be able to, you know, kind of do what Nelsie did for me, like giving that permission and giving that safe space of being able to say, this is who I am. So I want people to start like going to your bathrooms and look in the mirror and then just say the word black and see what happens. Like, just do that and get comfortable with that and get comfortable with what that means to you. And, you know, I think for me, that's the way for me to amplify it, is just to continue to be myself and to continue to speak out when I see things that aren't right. And centering blackness is important to me across the diaspora, mm-hmm. right? It's important to be able to center that and what that means to people. And also understanding and giving grace to the fact that not everybody has lived with, you know, what I've lived, or not everyone has an understanding of where they are, where they should be as to their own identity.
Yeah, I remember you saying that in one of your interviews, that you want people to see themselves and feel joy and pride about being part of the diaspora, because half of us found that out later that we were even part of the diaspora.
Yeah.
We're like, what is that?
How do you even say that? What does that mean?
What was I saying? Diaspora. Yeah, I was like saying it.
It took me forever just to even learn how to say the word, let alone knowing.
To say it like that too. I mean, you can say it however you want to. I will just say that because I used to say diaspora all the time.
Yeah, diaspora.
And that's
like,
what
are you talking about?
But yeah, it was important. And it was important to me in bringing, you know, the book to life. Like, if you took the word Dominican out and you put Jamaican.
Yes. Or
Brazilian,
mm-hmm. True.
Maybe change a couple of things inside, mm-hmm. you know, it would still apply. And so for me, it was certainly my story about being who I am and where I'm from, but I wanted the entire diaspora to see themselves in the book.
Wow. That's beautiful. And so I love that it's in Spanish as well.
Yeah.
That's crucial. It was important for me to have that too, and have it separate, not just have a bilingual book. I always feel like, so I used to be a book buyer in one of my last lives. And so I always used to look at these books and think, they just crammed the Spanish in here to make sure to call it bilingual. Like, they wanted to check off the bilingual box. Mm-hmm. And so it was really important to me that they be two separate books. And so I am just eternally grateful, because I literally, this was after the fact, after we started working on everything, I called Deneen one day and I was like, let me ask you a question. What do you think if we had this in Spanish? And she loved it. And you know, it was, we didn't plan out to have two books when we started. And so, and actually this is, Deneen Milner Books is their first book in Spanish.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Wow. That's amazing. It's very inspiring.
Yeah. It's so great.
It's really inspiring.
I was just happy to have, you know, have had someone that understood, that saw me, that saw us, and that, you know, knew the importance. I also wanted to make sure that, which is the reason why I included my, you know, my grandmother's names in Spanish. It's important for you to call your people's names, right? Yeah. And so I wanted them to see themselves, you know, not on this plane, but on the next, to see themselves being called in a book. And it was important for me to do that in Spanish.
Wow.
That's great. It's all connected. Your journey that you had in the past year and a half, mm-hmm. Very intentional. Your podcast, Café con Cili, the book, it's all connected. It's all being one and being, you know, finding your purpose, but also mm-hmm. being true to that purpose as well.
Definitely. Yep. I don't believe in coincidences.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Very intentional. Be intentional with your shit.
So,
you can let it out now.
Man,
if you want.
We put rated R on our, we were like, this is a mature audience
right now,
girl.
Yes,
you can curse.
It all in.
I was trying to be all like
all the cuss words are like right here on the side.
Oh my God.
Girl, yes, you can curse, please.
So, Cili, before we let you go, how can our listeners find you and follow you and stuff? What are your handles? Where are you at?
I am Cili Decio across the board on all social media channels. I also have my blog post, CiliDecio.com. There you can find information about the book, but I'm out here in these social media streets.
Great. Awesome.
We'll find you.
We will find you. Thank you so much. This was such an amazing conversation. Yes. It was really, really great.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate you all inviting me over.
Of course. We had so much fun.
So much fun. And we will continue to obsess over you. Don't worry. That will not end.
Yeah. We'll holler at you when we need some thuggery.
Yeah. And
I'll be checking in on y'all, like what y'all doing.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
We need that.
Yeah. Look at that.
Wow.
That was really cool.
That really was. I learned so much.
I just all these beautiful lessons we're learning.
We have so many cool traditions within our own family unit that sometimes we just take it for granted.
Yeah.
You know, because I definitely have aunts and uncles that, you know, we all grew up with someone who had some santos, mm-hmm. you know, in their house. Mm-hmm. Or somebody burning some sage, or somebody doing some type of limpieza.
Yeah.
We have such rich traditions in our families.
Yeah. It's really, she just landed a few perspectives on me that I really love and appreciate and I would have never thought of, you know, so.
Yeah.
I really appreciate.
And her book is just so beautiful.
And her vibe, man, just like was through the screen. Like I just wanted to sit down and like meditate with her all day.
Yeah. That's the great fun thing about this podcast, honestly, is meeting all these amazing people.
Yeah.
You know, that happen to be Dominican.
Yeah, they just happen to be.
Yeah, they just happen to be Dominican.
Black Dominicans, yeah. Mostly.
Yeah. I mean, I hope you guys are enjoying, you know, meeting all these new amazing people that are doing big things.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, listeners, we hope you enjoyed that as much as we did. Don't forget to follow us on IG,
Rocio
and Mercedes, www.rociomercedes.com, IG, Rocio Mercedes. For Twitter, it's R&M Podcast. I don't know who took our names on Twitter, but it's R&M Podcast on Twitter. What else we got? Oh, or email us.
Yeah, email us some of your spiritual practices.
Yeah.
Let us know what you thought about the episode.
Yeah, let us know. Give us that feedback, yo.
We're everywhere. Out in these social media streets, says.
Yeah.
Well, that was fun, guys.
That was so much fun. Have a great day, great night. Much love to everyone out there.
Bye.
Bye.